Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine. With the vote this year to decriminalise psilocybin in Denver, there's renewed interest around the country into psychedelics, and there's more discussion happening about the possible therapeutic benefits, particularly in treatment for things like PTSD and anxiety. We'll hear from some local researchers and therapists who welcome the research and the conversations that are now happening. Then we go to Larimer County to hear how oil and gas development is impacting communities there. A new group is forming to educate the public on the impacts. We'll hear from that group ahead of a forum that they're hosting later this week. On Resistance Radio, we'll hear about a protest that took place in Colorado Springs this past weekend, calling for an independent investigation into two recent fatal police shootings that happened in the city. At the bottom of the hour, we'll go back to the BBC for headlines, then a brand new commentary from Jim Hightower. Then it's time for Poco in Boco, our monthly look at issues facing people of colour in Boulder County. At 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold has ended months of speculation by announcing she will not run for U.S. Senate. In a statement released Friday by her exploratory committee, Griswold stated that now is not the right time for her to run for the Senate. She added that she was moved by the encouragement she received and thanks everyone for the support. She looks forward to continue working to ensure Coloradans have a democracy they can believe in. Griswold was elected to be Secretary of State last November. The Denver Post reports that Griswold would have been the first woman and the youngest person in the state's history to be a senator had she been elected. Meanwhile, if former Governor John Hickenlooper were to pull out of the presidential primary and run for the Democratic nomination for the Senate, a recent poll shows that he would immediately have a large lead. More than 60% of likely Democratic voters preferred Hickenlooper, compared to 10% for Mike Johnston and 8% for Andrew Romanoff. The Post reports that the poll was conducted late last month by a national Democratic group involved in Senate races. While Hickenlooper has shrugged off suggestions that he challenge Republican Senator Cory Gardner, the former governor has not entirely ruled out a Senate run. A group of young people concerned about gun violence staged a press conference outside of Senator Gardner's office on Friday. The Colorado chapter of March for Our Lives urged Gardner to support universal background checks. Westward reports that earlier last week, when confronted by activists, Gardner said he does not support gun control, and at a meeting, a meet and greet on August 7th, he asked activists not to partisanize the issue. Among the speakers at the Friday press conference was State Representative Tom Sullivan, whose son was killed at the Aurora Theater shooting in 2012. Sullivan said that he had seen the movement gain momentum in Colorado during the past years. Ethan Summers from Evergreen and a college student in Washington, D.C., was at Friday's event and said that there has been a summer of violence with no action out of Congress to remedy the situation. He added that passing the pending bill on background checks is something that should be easy for the senator to support. Boulder is being faced with another obstacle in its effort to create a municipal electric utility. Sarah Dogleish has more.
On Thursday, Colorado's Public Utilities Commission filed a motion dismissing Boulder's legal action attempting to condemn Xcel Energy's assets. The city had filed a petition in June after receiving no response from Xcel regarding Boulder's offer to buy the company's transmission grid in the city for $82 million. Commission spokesperson Terry Boat told the Daily Camera that the Public Utilities Commission is not opposed to Boulder's effort to form its own municipal electric utility. In its motion, the commission claims Boulder's offer to Xcel was premature, saying the state must finalize its approval of the list of assets that would transfer before Boulder can proceed. Some in Boulder, including City Councilman Bob Yates, have urged that the city's request to form a municipal electric utility should be reconsidered after Xcel promised late last year to significantly increase its renewable energy portfolio. For KGNU, I'm Sarah Dalgleish.
Late last week, after a five-hour public meeting, an agency of the City of Denver gave a construction partnership an extension on its permit to exceed nighttime noise limits at the I-70 expansion project. About 60 people attended Thursday night's meeting of the Denver Board of Public Health and Environment at the Swansea Recreation Center. The Colorado Independent reports that residents of the Globeville and Swansea-Elyria neighborhoods, where the expansion is underway, are trying to cope with its consequences. Raquel Casillas, a resident, told the board that her main concern has been vibrations, and she worries about the toll sleepless nights are taking on her four children. She also said that her husband and son have asthma, which has been made worse by dust kicked up by the construction. Debbie James with Unite North Metro Denver said that it is important to note the siege of noise pollution that the people in Globeville and Elyria Swansea live under, and that is what environmental racism looks like. Part of the crowd cheered at her remarks. A representative of the company doing the construction said that night work is needed to get the project completed on time. Officials with the city said that completing it as soon as possible will reduce health impacts. They also said that they are not allowed to regulate vibrations, but environmental advocates said that other cities like Toronto have vibration regulations. Newly elected council member Candy C. DeBaca encouraged the board members to drive around the neighborhood a bit to get a feel for what they go through there. The excess noise permit will run only until September 2020, which the Denverite reports was a small victory for residents. Instead, the contractor had wanted a variance approved for 3 years. Kiewit, the contractor, says that the noisiest part of the project will come when it tears down the existing viaduct. But before that begins, it looks like there will be another noise audit. The I-70 project is a little more than a quarter completed and is expected to last 3 more years. Today it will be sunny with highs around 90 and about the same forecast for tomorrow with small chance of afternoon thunderstorms. Right now it's close to 70 outside. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. With the recent decriminalization of psilocybin in Denver, and followed by Oakland, well, there's now a renewed interest in psychedelic drugs. New research is uncovering that some psychedelic drugs could be, in fact, an effective treatment for depression, anxiety, and PTSD. KGNU's Katie Bursak spoke with some local psychologists and researchers about what role psychedelics could play in the treatment of these disorders.
Rob Colbert has a master's in counseling and transpersonal psychology, PhD in anthropology and social change. He's an advocate of using psychedelic substances for his patients and even for those not struggling with a mental illness.
The reason that psychoactive substances have been used by humans for thousands of years to alter our consciousness of all sorts. Psilocybin and fungus, mushrooms, mycelium are just one set that have been around for a long time, but humans have altered it through alcohol or ayahuasca ceremonies, mescaline and peyote, marijuana, cannabis, we've altered it forever. So I believe that the reason behind that is that they are of benefit to our human potential, to our human growth, to the creativity of how we apply our conscious mind to our lives. And that's just something that humans have decided that they do and we continue to do. And it's almost ridiculous that we prohibit any substances, really.
New research is emerging about the therapeutic benefits of psychedelic substances. In a 2016 report published in the Lancet Psychiatry Journal, patients with treatment-resistant depression were given doses of psilocybin, and their depressive symptoms were markedly reduced within 1 week. Rob Colbert says there is also little evidence showing negative impacts of psilocybin use compared with other drugs.
Psilocybin is ranked in the top 5 reported recreational drugs that young people are using, but it is ranked the lowest, even below cannabis, as landing people in the hospital. As a clinician, I believe in increasing choice for people who are seeking help. And so when it comes to whether it's psilocybin or other substances, I kind of come from the camp of if it's been found to be helpful by someone, and researchers, educated researchers have gone through and kind of said, hey, this is, you know, safe enough, and that these, you know, reported benefits that, yeah, no, people who do this do report that after they've taken it. I think that, yeah, we should increase the choices available to people to get help. And so if psilocybin is it, I think that, yeah, we should make this accessible.
He argues that people suffering from mental illnesses like depression, anxiety, and PTSD may need these substances in order to heal when traditional medications don't seem to help.
But the glaring truth that a lot of these medications that are prescribed right now don't work, that almost two-thirds of people who take these medications don't see the proposed benefits and actually see harms or risks, if we were actually really truthful about that, we would say, oh no, we actually need to invite psilocybin or MDMA or these other substances in to be used because they have shown to be effective in other ways. And not that they're more effective or any, it's just they work differently and they're effective for different people for different reasons.
Derek May is a Boulder-based addiction psychiatrist and former Johns Hopkins research fellow who has done research on using psilocybin to treat major depressive disorder and using MDMA to treat PTSD.
Kind of bolster their effect is a good model that we're looking at, and that replacing daily use medications is kind of the goal. And also along that, to note is that all of the studies that are being done with psilocybin, people cannot be on the typical antidepressants because they have a serotonergic effect, which could potentially a serotonergic effect, and so there could be a potential interaction there. Probably mostly that psilocybin effects will be blunted if you're using a antidepressant, but then it's also a potential for serotonin syndrome. So currently there is not being studies looking at people using antidepressants along and with psilocybin. But yeah, there seems to be you know, some people with a variety of conditions that can be used for because they have pretty broad-ranging effects on the brain and on the mind and allow people to see things from a different perspective and kind of shake up patterns of really tightly wound thought patterns that are often a part of psychiatric disorders.
Particularly, psilocybin has been shown to improve some compulsive disorders.
I think any condition that where there's a really a tightening of mental processes where people get stuck in one rut thinking, oh, I'm really anxious or I can't stop thinking about this, like with OCD or, you know, kind of ruminating over their depression.
But he also cautions that it's not for everyone.
Flip side, mental conditions where there's a loosening of mental processes such as psychosis or schizophrenia, I think introducing something that can, like psilocybin, that can cause more a little bit more freedom in thought processes, that it could be potentially detrimental in those conditions. Yeah, I think anyone with a family history or a personal history of psychosis should be very thoughtful and cautious of using psilocybin because it does seem to be able to exacerbate psychosis. And there, like I mentioned, there is a risk of hallucinogen persisting perceptual disorder that we don't know what the incidence or prevalence of that is, but it is a real phenomenon that has lifelong negative consequences from use.
When these substances are used clinically or in a non-clinical setting, May warns that there is always the possibility of experiencing a bad trip.
You know, a bad trip in the colloquial language is an anxiety attack or a panic attack that does resolve, but that people with pre-existing psychosis or other mental health conditions can have serious consequences. They can it can induce hallucinogen persisting perceptual disorder and something that's going to cause, you know, lifelong changes in the brain. As happens with HPPD, is certainly a bad trip. That's a bad outcome. But I think that most bad trips are challenging experiences that can be learned from. The risks really of psilocybin can be managed in a clinical setting that they really aren't as risky as they were currently or that they used to be thought of, and that a lot of the risks were overblown.
A 2016 report published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology showed that these bad trips can be a reality for many people. Nearly 2,000 people were surveyed about their single worst bad trip after consuming psilocybin mushrooms. 39% rated it among the top five most challenging experiences of their lifetime. 11% of respondents said they put themselves or others at risk of physical harm. One factor identified in that report was the lack of social support while taking the drug. Katie Klum, a licensed counselor.
What we're surrounded by, the people that we're with, is really going to impact. And I would encourage people to be really mindful about where they're taking it, making sure that they're safe, that there are people there to support them. Because where we're doing this matters. It can impact it greatly.
Rob Colbert says that even those who have a negative experience while using psychedelics can turn that into a positive experience.
Even the people who have reported really intense, extreme, or, you know, like bad trip kind of scenarios actually found really deep insight, or found really, they were able to connect with these deeper, darker areas of their lives or their experience or their trauma or whatever it was in ways that, well, wasn't accessible during, you know, just normal waking consciousness. And so whether or not that was good or bad, I don't know. It kind of goes on what they do with it next.
Klum thinks that there are many benefits to be found from psilocybin, particularly in the treatment of trauma.
Trauma can be really hard to work through, and it can take people a really, really long time to process an event or a series of events that have happened in their lives. And it can have a whole range of impact on an individual's lives, and sometimes it's devastating. So I think that's what I'm most excited and hopeful for from a mental health perspective.
There are even benefits for people who experience chronic pain conditions. Eli Katz, who was involved with the decriminalization movement in Denver, uses psilocybin in microdosing form on a daily basis.
So I personally have a condition called CRPS, Complex Regional Pain Syndrome. And I use psilocybin in my practice daily, in microdosing form, to help the pain that I feel on my left foot. So it's, every day I wake up with a pain between a 4 and a 5 on the pain scale. And if it goes into an attack, it's like a migraine in my foot. I make sure that I take the microdose 5 days a week to ensure that I don't have an attack and it doesn't get worse than that. And so microdosing refers to 0.25 grams or less of psilocybin mushrooms that can be consumed in a capsule, that can be in a tea. It's simply a weighed out amount. It's not going to cause any psychedelic effects.
The FDA has granted breakthrough therapy status to psilocybin, allowing a select group of therapists to use it on patients with treatment-resistant depression in order to determine the optimal dose of the drug. In the meantime, more communities are looking to decriminalize it. Oregon is considering a 2020 ballot measure to allow Oregonians to use guided psilocybin services for therapeutic purposes. For KGNU, I'm Katie Bursack.
And earlier this summer, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez filed legislation to remove a legal barrier that scientists say is making it incredibly difficult for them to actually study the potential medical benefits of psychedelic drugs like psilocybin. We'll have more on that at our website, news.kgnu.org. It is 22 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, Larimer County may not be dealing with as much fracking as its neighbour, Weld County, but some residents say they are still paying attention to what recent state legislation might mean in terms of local control over drilling. A new group is forming to educate residents in Larimer County on the impact of fracking, and they're going to be hosting a public forum tomorrow evening in Loveland. It'll feature local elected officials and health professionals. I spoke with Ed Behan, who is one of the organisers of the forum, and I asked him what's happening in Larimer County when it comes to regulating oil and gas.
The Larimer County Commissioners have established a task force to formulate new regulations, primarily land use regulations, but that would have effects on oil and gas development in Larimer County. This is all under the aegis of the recently passed Senate Bill 181, which changes the focus of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to focus more on health, safety, and the environment rather than primarily promoting the industry.
One of the big concerns that Front Range communities that are dealing with fracking, one of the concerns that they have is the proximity of the oil and gas development to neighbourhoods, to residential areas, and sometimes to schools. Is that something that you're dealing with in Larimer County as well?
Yes, there's actually been a couple of projects that have been proposed in Larimer County with quite a number of wells associated with each of the two locations that have been a primary focus. Their proximity to residential neighborhoods and schools, parks, also their proximity to floodplains along some key water courses in the area. We, looking at regulations at the county level, the regulations at the state level indicate that we can look at all the surface issues. We can influence what the commissioners may have to say about the surface issues. And that can be anything from, you know, noise and traffic and light pollution. The concerns, again, about how well the facilities are operated. What is a safe distance from something that is basically leaking all kinds of things at the surface level, whether you're talking methane or volatile organic compounds, concerns about that, you know, is there actually a safe distance from a residential neighborhood for that sort of development? These are the serious questions to ask. Water use issues come into play as well because they use an awful lot of fresh water to make up the fluid that gets injected downhole, but what comes out afterwards is not something that is readily processable, shall we say. You can't just recycle that stuff and reuse the water. So those are concerns as well. And making sure that the operation is, you know, if it's actually being operated properly, we have the questions as to just how well it can be operated. So these are all the questions that we're looking at, and proximity to all of these locations is a concern.
On Tuesday, you have this forum, and you're going to have representatives of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Now, they recently released their report looking at the health impact. You'll also have a commissioner from Adams County. They have a moratorium in force, and also a mayor, the mayor of Berthoud, William Carspeck. Now, that city has also enacted a moratorium on oil and gas development. You'll also have State Senator Mike Foote, who's going to be there. He was one of the co-sponsors of Senate Bill 181, that's giving communities more options in terms of local control. Tell us about some of the folks who are going to be talking on Tuesday.
Well, again, to hear from the mayor of Berthoud and the commissioner from Adams County, who have enacted these moratoriums or suspensions of permitting, we want to draw on their experience. The discussion of asking the commissioners to enact some sort of a suspension until rules are in place, that is certainly something that we have in mind. Wanting to also have more input on the rules and regulations that are being formulated by the Oil and Gas Task Force is another key issue that we're looking at. The suspension would seem to make sense until we know what sort of regulations the county wants to try to enforce. And I guess there's also some concern. The county is really trying to put these regulations in place by this fall. By October is the indication they've given thus far, where they want to pass that on to the planning board and then have the recommendation passed on to the commissioners. And we would probably raise the question as well as to why there should be such a rush to put these regulations into effect locally when the state Oil and Gas Conservation Commission themselves are taking anywhere from a year to a year and a half to formulate their regulations. We would hope that the state regulations would be very stringent, but those are to be viewed as a floor, if you will, and we might look at land use regulations within Larimer County that are even more stringent than what the state is proposing. But we want to see what is being proposed, and we want to have some input on that process.
Ed Bean is with a new group that is being formally launched in Larimer County at this forum that's happening tomorrow. The forum is Oil and Gas Drilling and Your Family. It's a public forum happening at the Harrington Arts Alliance. That's on North Denver Avenue in Loveland. It happens tomorrow, Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. And it'll also mark the launching of this new forum, this coalition really that's emerging in Larimer County around this issue of oil and gas. Now, we have full information on the forum, on the various different speakers. It's all online at news.kgnu.org. Just click on Resistance Radio. Well, next on Resistance Radio, we go to Colorado Springs. Around 100 peaceful demonstrators gathered there on Saturday morning downtown to march in protest against police brutality. Ali Budner of our sister station KRCC was there and brings us this report.
No justice!
The march was primarily in response to the recent Colorado Springs police shootings of two men, 19-year-old Devon Bailey and 38-year-old Josh Vigil. 18-year-old Kaylani Lassane was one of the organizers.
This is our life. We have to live with this, whether it's happening here or anywhere else.
Members of Vigil's family were at the protest and said they're not satisfied with how authorities have handled the investigation into his death. Body camera footage from Bailey's shooting is expected to be released soon. Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers has asked the city to be patient. But protester John Christiansen doesn't trust they will release information without pressure from the community.
You know, the powers that be want us to stay calm. They want us to stay home. They want us to be patient, but that's never worked in the history of all social change.
Bailey's family is expected to speak at a press conference on Tuesday. I'm Ali Budner.
And it's time now for the Resistance Radio calendar. This Thursday, August 15th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Belong Church on North Ogden Street in Denver, a presentation and a community training, a history of race and white supremacy in the U.S. It's Thursday, August 15th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. On Friday, August 14th, Mobile Home Organizing and Empowerment Institute. It happens this Friday, August 16th from 6 p.m. Also continuing on August 17th, and it's at the 9-to-5 offices, and that's at 1634 Downing Street in Denver. You can find out more information about those and other events in our Resistance Radio calendar. Just go to news.kgnu.org and click on Resistance Radio.
Some folks are gonna get the notion, I know. They'll say I'm preaching hate.
South Korea says it'll drop Japan from a list of favoured trading partners in a tit-for-tat move following recent restrictions imposed by Tokyo on exports to South Korea. Seoul had described Japan's action as an all-out declaration of economic war. The Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, Mohammed bin Zayed, has met King Salman to discuss a new crisis sparked by southern separatists effectively seizing Yemen's second city, Aden. The conflict between the separatists, who are backed by the U.S.